Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Support for WPR comes from Wills on behalf of Wisconsin Public Libraries, offering access to ebooks, audiobooks, digital magazines, and more. Available with a Wisconsin Library Card at wisconsinsdigitallibrary.org.
When you're talking about the intersection of science fiction and mysticism, or pop culture and the paranormal, there's one writer who comes to mind instantly. Alan Moore, one of the most influential creative forces in the history of comic books. Moore is responsible for groundbreaking series like Watchmen and The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He's also a practicing ceremonial magician and a legendary recluse. But he does spend time every year with a fellow comic book creator, Gary Spencer Millage. Millage has just written a biography called Alan Moore Storyteller. He talks with Ann Strainchamps about his friend's work, beginning with a comic book series, V for Vendetta.
That was based on a very early idea Alan had about an anarchist vigilante that wore a mask, a very anti-establishment hero, but with a certain ambiguity. But Alan wove this incredibly intricate story around this almost Zorro-like figure that was set in the near future, or at the time of writing, the far distant future of 1995, I think it was. With David Lloyd on artwork, it just made a huge impact.
And this was in the early 80s, right?
Yeah, about 86, I think, 86, 87. It was serialised in Warrior originally.
Yeah. So Margaret Thatcher was in power in Britain. The British economy was in the doldrums. Did Moore have a particular political agenda, political philosophy he was working out through V for Vendetta?
I'm sure he was. With his upbringing, he was almost programmed to vote Labour. You know, there was a lot of anti-Thatcherite feeling at the time. The police state, which is very obvious in V for Vendetta, was obviously an extrapolation of what was going on at the time with video surveillance cameras on every street corner, which was something that, you know, you couldn't conceive back in the mid-80s, but of course it's very commonplace today.
Good evening, London. It's 9 o'clock and this is the voice of fate, broadcasting on 275 and 285 in the medium wave. It is the 5th of the 11th, 1997. The people of London are advised that the Brixton and Streatham areas are quarantine zones as of today. It is suggested that these areas be avoided for reasons of health and safety. Police raided 17 homes in the Birmingham area earlier this morning, uncovering what is believed to be a major terrorist ring. 20 people, 8 of them women, are currently in detention awaiting trial. Queen Zara today appeared at the opening of a new waste reclamation plant in Plaistow. This was the Queen's first public appearance since her 16th birthday in June. The Queen was wearing a suit of peach silk, created specially for the occasion by the Royal Couturier.
Alan Moore's most famous work has to be Watchmen. It's the only graphic novel actually ever to appear on Time magazine's list of the all-time 100 greatest novels. Can you give us a brief outline of the plot and what's Watchmen about?
Watchmen's about the potential end of the world, and it's a breakdown of superheroes.
What he's basically doing is kind of deconstructing the whole superhero genre?
Yes, and it's not so much the actual plot, but it's typical of Alan's writing approach, the symmetry in the book. It was produced originally as a 12-issue miniseries, and the first and the last issues bookended each other perfectly. Each page was broken down into 9 panels. It was very structural, incredibly well thought through, and it told a story in so many new ways and with such high quality in both the writing and the artwork. Again, Dave Gibbons was the artist on Watchmen. It worked on so many different levels that it became hugely popular by the superhero fan, and also people that, you know, maybe superheroes were a bit passé for them, they'd grown out superheroes a little bit. This was a completely different take on superheroes, so it worked for them as well.
Rorschach's Journal, October 12th, 1985. dog carcass in alley this morning. Tire tread on burst stomach, this city is afraid of me. I have seen its true face. Streets are extended gutters, and the gutters are full of blood, and when the drains finally scab over, all the vermin will drown. The accumulated filth of all their sex and murder will foam up about their waist, and all the whores and politicians will look up and shout, "Save us!" And I'll look down and whisper, "No."
Kind of a grown-up take on superheroes? I mean, what do his superheroes do?
Watchmen almost became the basis for all superhero comics from that point onwards. I know Alan kind of regrets almost writing Watchmen because it changed them for the worse, because Watchmen was supposed to be the last word on superheroes, not the first word of a whole new kind of darker, grittier, kind of more violent sort of superhero, because Alan thought he was taking it to the logical extreme. People have kind of taken it on from there, and as I say, Alan probably regrets some of that now.
Alan Moore famously kind of reinvented himself around age 40 when he decided to become a ceremonial magician. Can you explain, first of all, what that even means?
Well, I'm not sure Alan really knew what it meant, whether you believe him or not. He actually said it was originally possibly a little bit of a joke that he had to carry through on. But, I mean, his good friend Steve Moore, which he's been friends with since he was about 15 years old, was already experimenting in magic. And he had his first magic experience with Steve, conjuring up a demon. So he wanted to take it more seriously. I mean, at the time he was writing From Hell, which was a 600-page graphic novel that he wrote with Eddie Campbell illustrating. And there's a single panel in that where one of the characters said that if gods and demons exist in your mind, then they are real if they exist in your mind. I can't remember the exact quote. He said it was a panel that actually changed his life, changed his way of looking at reality and magic. Yeah, I mean, he claims to have had regular magic rituals to conjure up demons and make sacrifices by destroying something of personal value to himself, and worshipping a snake god called Glycon, which was actually a second century glove puppet some con man used to use. He said, you know, at least he's not going to believe that it created the universe or anything dangerous like that.
Wait. So is it a god or a puppet?
Well, it's a puppet that Alan uses as a god.
And does he think it's literally real, or does he think it's a figment of his imagination?
Well, I think reality and imagination are probably, you know, up for argument themselves. Looking from Alan's point of view, he knows Glycon is not literally real, but he's still chosen to have him as his god.
Does he have conversations with Glycon?
Yes.
And what sort of things does Glycon say?
Well, I haven't been there. I haven't been there personally.
Well, has Alan reported?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of personal, the things that he's discussed with him, but it's helped him open his mind to be more creative. And I think the whole exercise is about expanding your mind and blurring the mind between fantasy and reality.
So he's got this famous phrase, art is magic, magic is
yes.
Art. What does he mean by that?
He means magic is creating something out of nothing. And when you write a story or draw a picture, I mean, you are literally doing that. You're actually creating something that didn't exist before. It could be an idea or a song or a piece of artwork. And that's what magic is in its most simple sense.
But there's got to be more to it than that, because isn't he trying to turn that into a ceremony of sorts, to turn art-making into a form of mysticism?
From what he's told me, he doesn't do so many ceremonies now because he doesn't need to do them. But I think at the time, for a number of years, he did practice magic on a regular basis on his own and with a group of friends. And I think they did help create new art. The Birth Call, which was a performance piece that he wrote and later came out on CD and was later adapted into like a comic strip by Eddie Campbell. That was straight out of A Magic Ritual.
Inside the birth. The birth. The birth call is... The birth call is... The birth call is the honest silence of ourselves. We breathe in water that is warm and luminous and only are. The birth call is a monstrous bivouac of the impending soul upon the cold plateaus that overlook the world. The birth call is the street plan of Atlantis, hushed, drowned avenues of our beginnings, lost in myth and bladder rack.
There is some confusion as to what magic actually is. I think that this can be cleared up if you just look at the very earliest descriptions of magic. Magic, in its earliest form, is often referred to as the art. I believe that this is completely literal. I believe that magic is art, and that art, whether that be writing, music, sculpture, or any other form, is literally magic. Art is, like magic, the science of manipulating symbols, words, or images to achieve changes in consciousness. The very language of magic seems to be talking as much about writing or art as it is about supernatural events. A grimoire, for example, the Book of Spells, is simply a fancy way of saying grammar. Indeed, to cast a spell is simply to spell, to manipulate words, to change people's consciousness. And I believe that this is why an artist or writer is the closest thing in the contemporary world that you are likely to see to a shaman.
That's Alan Moore from a documentary called The Mindscape of Alan Moore. Gary Spencer Millage is a comic book creator and the author of Alan Moore Storyteller. He spoke with Anne Strangechamps.